Kansas City, Missouri is also a little more solar powered after an announcement last week that 80 government buildings will soon have panels on top. They promise, officials say, to save the city money and maybe more importantly, send a message about the need to think green. I'm Brian Ellis, and today on Central Standard, we'll explore the ways solar energy is becoming more and more common in the metro and whether it's worth the effort. And later, we'll talk about something already common in the metro. Fountains. The city's iconic water displays. They've made us famous, but now they're in pretty bad shape. How do we take care of them? How do we pay for it? And could your favorite fountain be in trouble? Power from the sky and water from the earth. It's all ahead today on Central Standard. My foundation is strong, but I allow some things to move, and that is energy from the fountain of you. After the news. Listen to this from a guy named Danny Kennedy. Think about it this way. We're killing people in foreign lands in order to extract 200 million-year-old sunlight. Then we burn it in order to boil water, to create steam, to drive a turbine, to generate electricity. We frack our own backyards and pollute our rivers, or we blow up our mountaintops just miles from our nation's capital for an hour of electricity when we could just take what's falling free from the sky. This is Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Those words from the founder of Sunergy, a solar company, he said them to the New York Times last year. They're really the heart of any call for more investment in solar energy. It's a hot topic, if you will, though, and the city of Kansas City, Missouri, is on board. 80 government buildings will soon be leasing solar panels and getting cheaper energy as a result. The city's not alone. Solar is cropping up all over town on homes and businesses and churches. But why? And is it really worth it? Later today, we'll be talking about Kansas City's iconic fountains, but first, solar energy in the metro. Joining us are Chuck Kaisley. He's Vice President of Marketing and Public Affairs at KCPNL. Chuck, good morning and welcome.
Good morning and thanks for having me.
We're glad to have you. And Susan Brown is Vice President of Public Affairs at Brightergy, which is the company installing those panels on KCMO buildings. Welcome to you, Susan.
Brian, thanks.
So I think many of us still put solar in that alternative energy sources category, knowing that oil and coal and natural gas are the big three. Let me start with you, Chuck. How big is solar energy in America today?
Well, solar energy is increasingly, and particularly in our service territory, becoming a part of our customers' energy portfolio. If you go back just 3 years ago, when the first of the rebates for this rebate program that we have in Missouri started rolling out, we're only doing a couple $100,000 a year, and now it's up to millions of dollars. So I think there's an awareness of solar, and I think that by and large, people see it as an important part of a sustainable and balanced energy future.
Susan Brown, you see this from the commercial end of the conversation. How widespread is solar from your perspective?
Well, like Chuck said, it really is growing. It still is a small percentage, but last year, installations nationwide grew 76%. 82,000 U.S. homes installed solar in 2012. 7,700 megawatts of installed solar in the U.S. now. So it is becoming something.
What's a megawatt? Give us some
perspective.
It's
a lot. Chuck can probably answer that.
It's a lot of watts. That's how we measure the output of a power plant. And to give you an idea, about 100 megawatts would be enough to power about 33 to 35,000 homes.
Okay, so it's a lot, but we need a lot of megawatts. I wonder, Chuck. I mean, you work here, obviously, here in the Kansas City area. Are certain parts of the country the real leaders in the solar movement?
Well, I think that the coasts where energy has been more expensive than here in the heartland for many years kind of made the economic proposition more viable in earlier years. And certainly people think about sun states like Arizona and California when they think of solar. But the truth be told is we've actually got a very good region here in the Kansas City area for solar and is, you know, one of the top solar producing areas or the availability for solar in the United States. And so it's not thought of as one of the first areas of the country you think of, but actually it should be.
That does surprise me. Maybe Susan, I don't understand how solar energy works, but we are certainly not the sunniest place in the country, especially at times of year when we have storms or several inches of rain a day. How does solar energy work such that this is a good place?
Well, usually the way we install solar now, it's basically a supplement. So you still continue to receive energy just like you always did, but you're from your utility, but your solar energy that you're receiving will offset the amount of power that you're demanding from the utility. So if the grid goes down, your solar energy, unless you have battery, will also go down. So it's really just supplementing that power.
Chuck, can you explain kind of the chemistry or the physics of it? If for someone who doesn't have a science degree, how do you turn light into power?
Well, you're talking to a recovered lawyer.
Well, all the better.
Who now is nowhere near any kind of a scientific degree, and so no, I don't have the fundamentals. I would hazard a guess. Susan might be better at that.
All right.
I will tell you is, you know, when you did ask earlier, why Kansas City? How can it still be good? We've had this rain. We've had this cloud cover. Most people don't know, but the solar panels that Brightergy installs or KCP&L installs today, even when it's cloudy, can be somewhere between 75 and 80% of their capacity. So they're still making electricity. There's still enough light. There's still enough energy from the sun, even when it's cloudy. And when you look at cloud cover days, compared to other areas of the country, still, Kansas City is not one of the higher areas with lots of cloud cover.
Clouds aren't strong enough to stop solar power, Susan?
No, how it works, and I'm not an expert on the physics of it, but basically the panels, you have sunlight falling on the panels. They convert it to DC power, which is like your car battery. So most of everything in your home runs off of AC power. So the components are pretty minimal. You have the panels, the inverter, which changes that power from DC into usable AC, and that just feeds into your main electrical panel. So you're getting power both from your solar and still from your utility. And then if you have any excess in Missouri and almost every state in the country now, you earn credits. You can roll those over into the next month, and those laws vary across the country. But it's a very simple, beautiful technology. These panels have 25-year warranties. They will last 30 or 40 years. There's no moving parts. Very little maintenance, so it's a fantastic technology.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I have found most fascinating is that if you're generating excess power in your own home, that power actually goes back to the grid, that you actually can be paid, essentially, for the power you're generating.
Correct. You're not going to become your own power plant or anything. There are certain rules, but you can, let's say you're gone during the day, you're at work, you're not using a lot of energy, you can earn credits for that and use it later on.
So, Chuck, help us understand how this works from a sort of a financial and administrative standpoint. You're a utility. There's all these companies. Brightergy is one of several companies that install these solar panels. What's the relationship between you as a utility and these solar companies?
We've got a great relationship with Brightergy and actually upwards of another 20 solar companies that are doing work in our service territory. You know, from a KCP&L perspective, anything we can do to help customers reduce their cost and to be more environmentally friendly and sustainable in this region is something that's very important to us. And as a matter of fact, as a result of that, we've had even we're the only utility in the United States that actually has an ongoing operating agreement with the Sierra Club. So just sustainability generally is something that is important to us. The way this works is a law was passed in 2008 by an initiative petition that affords a $2 a watt rebate to anybody who gets who installs solar on their home or their business. And so from an administration standpoint, we take customers' applications to have a meter that works both ways, meaning that meters the energy coming in and meters the energy that goes out, and that they're going to be putting up a solar installation with a company like Brightergy. And then based on how much they put in, we will pay a rebate of $2 to them, which is a significant way to buy down the cost of installing that solar on your residence or on your business.
And just for comparison, Chuck, how much am I paying for a watt of electricity on my regular electric bill?
Well, that's a real interesting question. A watt is so small that we actually talk in terms of a kilowatt, and a kilowatt is an amount, but you actually pay for an amount over a period of time. So we measure it in kilowatt hours, and you probably pay, if you're a residential customer, somewhere around 8 to 9 cents, depending on the season, for a kilowatt hour of electricity in the KCP&L service territory.
So a $2 a watt rebate on a typical person's electric bill for the typical kind of solar installation, Susan Brown, is going to be how much?
It depends. It's probably with all the incentives. So not only is there the rebate, there's also a federal tax credit, and for businesses, a depreciation incentive. It's anywhere from, it pays 75 to 80, 90% of the system cost. It depends on where you are. I wanted to add one thing to what we were talking about earlier about the cost of the system. So the price of, one thing that's been driving the market has been the declining cost of solar panels, and that's really been fantastic. We see that leveling off now, but they have there's been a dramatic decline. But what we're trying to do now is drive the soft cost. So what we have to have a very close relationship, obviously, with the utility, because we are tying in with their system. And those the cost of permitting, the cost of interconnecting with the utility, those are still pretty significant and where we need to make some strides, and we need help.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking in this half of our show about solar energy, especially as it is found here in the Kansas City metro area. Susan Brown is with Brightergy, which is a solar company that is doing a lot of work here in Kansas City. We also have Chuck Caisley from KCP&L. Susan, tell us about the big announcement last week where 80 city buildings are going to be equipped with solar panels. That your company's doing that, right?
Yes, we are sharing that job with KCP&L. It's really an exciting project for the city. I worked on the city has a climate protection plan, one of the first cities in the country to do that, and I have seen the city follow through on those plans. So many times, you know, things are dropped, but this city is really doing a lot, and it's saving taxpayers a lot of money, and this is a good example. So there'll be 80 of various city buildings for a total of 2 megawatts, one of the largest projects in the country. There'll be police, fire departments, community centers. It will produce the combined total 2.6 million kilowatt hours per year, offsetting about 2.5% of the electricity usage in the buildings. In the first year, they'll save $40,000 for taxpayers, and that will increase every year. Of course, the environmental and the health benefits, a lot of greenhouse gas reductions with that.
So these 80 buildings that are being equipped, these are mostly fire department, police station kind of buildings?
We don't have the complete list yet, but some of the initial buildings are the Gem Theater, the 18th and Vine Museum, Southeast Community Center, the Water Department Fleet Management Building, Health Department, the Aviation Building, Brush Creek Community Center.
Yeah. Let me ask you, Chuck, you're part of this project as well. What is this important on an actual sort of financial basis in terms of the real money this is going to save the city, or is it more important on a symbolic level?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, the city is essentially, by putting in solar arrays on 80 buildings, they are locking in the cost of that electricity at a fixed price for 20 years. And the cost of everything in today's society is going up. So it's a wise financial move for them. It also gives them power generated right at the source. It's needed. So from a reliability standpoint, energy made exactly where you live. There's no wires or other things to travel over. And I think, you know, again, just from a sustainability platform, regardless of your position on global warming, people get very impassioned when they talk about global warming and climate change. Regardless what your position is on that, what you can know for certainty is one of these days coal will run out. One of these days uranium will run out. One of these days oil will run out. Sunlight Well, that's got a little bit of a longer, time horizon, so to speak.
When the sunlight runs out, we have bigger problems.
That's right. And so anything that cities can do, large organizations can do to start balancing their portfolio and of how they meet their energy needs is a wise step. And I think that doing 80 buildings to the extent that you can diversify your portfolio, be cleaner, help meet a variety of different federal environmental regulations for the region. This is just a good win-win positive step forward for our region.
Sure. I want to invite our listeners to be part of the conversation. If you know of somewhere that solar energy has made a difference in your home or your business, for example, tell us about it. And if you don't have solar, what's holding you back? Do you have concerns about this whole concept? Call us at 816-235-2888. It's 235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. I know when I start talking about science, I'm asking for listener input, and someone found our number himself so he could call us and tell us. Matt in Baldwin City, tell us how does a solar panel turn light into energy?
Well, this is my understanding, and it's actually pretty simple that the silica that the solar panel is made out of is not organized as an orderly crystal that lets the light go all the way through. And the light's traveling in the form of a carrier particle called a boson. When it strikes a solid surface, it becomes a photon, and that is a packet of energy, and that goes into the silica. And because it's amorphous silica, it's more like a little maze. It doesn't just go through the silica and come out as another boson on the other side. It actually charges up the silica atoms and pushes out electrons, and it pushes them out at a constant rate, producing electron pressure, which is what we call voltage. And
Matt, are you reading this off of Wikipedia right now, or do you actually know all this?
No, this is in my head.
Good for you. this is very helpful. And so the result of the electrons being pushed out is that comes out in the form of energy that can then be converted to electricity.
Sure. And I think that as they learn to create better ways of focusing sunlight. I think that was the purpose of that company, Solyndra, was their patent or whatever they were doing was a way to concentrate the light differently so that it would produce more voltage.
Right.
And I think most people kind of wonder how solar panels work, and it's really just basically energy in, energy out, but it's energy from one form in the form of light.
Converting it to another.
And it's interesting because, there's the whole word boson has been in the news lately with the Higgs boson, and that's just because, light and gravity and mass are all sort of connected to these carrier particles.
Okay.
Anyway,
well, Matt, I really appreciate your taking the time to call in and help us figure it out. Thanks so much.
All right, well, thanks.
And actually, Matt mentioned Solyndra, which I do want to talk about, because that's what a lot of people are thinking about when they hear solar energy, especially when we're talking about all these financial incentives that taxpayer dollars are giving to solar energy right now. What happened with Solyndra, Chuck Casely, and how is that not what's likely to happen in this case?
Well, I think when you're talking about Solyndra, you're really talking about apples and oranges to what's going on with the city of Kansas City and Brightergy and KCP&L's project. I mean, essentially what you have is a manufacturer there, a U.S. manufacturer, for a variety of reasons, a declining price, that Susan mentioned earlier, the declining cost of solar panels and solar components. And then just trade implications, essentially with China, I think put cost pressures on U.S. solar manufacturers. Now, these are not retailers, but these are manufacturers of component parts that probably made competition, at least in the short run, a pretty difficult thing. What's good about and different in this situation is Brightergy and KCP&L here are acting as solar installers, and so we go to a variety of different solar, producers or manufacturers of panels and component parts, and we'll source them and we'll install them here in Kansas City. And so Solyndra really doesn't have too much to do with this project other than I think it is an important bookmark to what Susan said, which was one of the things that is making solar more affordable and increasing the market for solar energy is the fact that the price of all of the inputs to putting a solar installation on your home or business have fallen dramatically over the last 2 or 3 years.
Susan, you do not work for Solyndra. Brightergy is a very different kind of company, right?
Right. We're solar installers, and the panels that we're using are just the traditional panels that have been in use since the 1950s. I mean, this is tried and true technology. And really what is exciting to follow up is, you know, the jobs that we're seeing in Missouri are not only the installation jobs. This is so interesting to me. We are have the sixth highest number of solar jobs of any state, which is just incredible to me.
Given that we're not one of those coastal states that have been the early adopters of this technology.
Yes, this is Missouri.
Let me ask you about some of the financial model. In fact, we have a question from Grover in Midtown. Grover, welcome to Central Standard.
Well, I've got a kind of a three-part question. First of all, you know, back in the 70s when solar really came on, there was a huge cost loss as far as what it actually cost you to manufacture them. And what your overall recoup would be out of it. You know, it was self-productive. And, you know, you just never recouped the energy you used to build the solar panel. The other questions are, you know, what's a recoup time if it is actually productive now? And what are they doing with the waste from the production? Can you guys answer any of those?
Okay, good questions, Grover. All of those. Let's put that first to Susan here. You know, comparing it to the kind of the financial model of the 70s, how are people making money on this, and how are people spending money on this?
Well, I was alive in the 70s, obviously, but my understanding is the 70s it was more centered on solar hot water. What we are doing, this is solar photovoltaic. So hot water was preheating water. What we're doing now is actually creating electricity. So it's apples and oranges today. But as far as I don't have the statistic in front of me, but I think it's like a matter of months that you recoup the energy that the solar panel produces offsets what it took to manufacture that panel.
Chuck Casely, if a person puts a solar array on their own home, they're probably not really buying the solar panels at this point, right? Are they likely to be leasing them?
Well, there's a variety of different ways you can do it. You can buy them or you can lease them, and depending on your financial situation and what you want to do in terms of, you know, outlaying cash, either one are available from a variety of different solar installers in our area. And each has its own benefits. To the issue of you know, the financial model of doing it, I think the saying in our industry 30 years ago, 40 years ago, was you would be better off investing in a U.S. Treasury bond and taking the proceeds or the interest from that over a 30-year time period and applying them towards your electricity bill than putting a solar installation on your home or your business. Today, that is just not the case. Today, if you put a solar installation on your home or your business, anywhere from a couple of months to a year, year and a half, or so is when you would have essentially paid for the amount of money that you invested in it or put it in it. And then after that, as Susan said, these are panels that work for 20, 25 years. And so every day after that, unless somebody imposes a cost for the sun, you're essentially getting free electricity to the extent that your system provides it. So.
And when you say it pays for itself in that relatively short amount of time, is that including the government incentives that help pay for it?
That's right. That's and that's why there's a range. I mean, if you're a business and you can take advantage of accelerated depreciation and you have an appetite for tax credits and you get the rebate, it can be very, very quick that you would recoup your investment. On the other hand, if you are a residential customer or a not-for-profit and you can't take advantage of all of those or some of those things, you still get the $2 a watt rebate, and that $2 a watt rebate still puts you in a place where very quickly you recover your investment, and then it's all upside for the duration of the time you have the solar panels.
You know, I guess I want to ask both of you, and one of the critiques that is sometimes made about this direction is that, yes, it sounds like you're going to save all this money, but of course you're saving that money because of tax incentives, because of rebates. You know, those are your taxpayer dollars. So some would say you're paying for it one way or the other. The difference with solar power is that everybody's paying for a few people's power. How do you respond to that, Susan?
Well, I would say that every industry, especially the fossil fuel industry, has utilized incentives to get started and get going. And in the case of fossil fuels, they still receive incentives. So, yes, this is an industry that is still in its infancy. It's still a very small percentage. And I think most people would agree that it is smart to try and develop that industry so that it becomes scalable, that it becomes viable, because we really haven't seen the price declines until now, until we've been more, you know, until we've had more installers, more competition, and now it's kicking in. And our industry is very interested in seeing those incentives decline, and they are declining.
Let's take one more call from Angela in Blue Springs. Angela, welcome to Central Standard.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I was just wondering from a renter's standpoint, would it be plausible for us as a family to buy a solar panel? And then would it be logical for us to be able to remove it and bring it with us when it's time for us to buy a house? I mean, is that at all make sense?
Yeah, Chuck, what is out there for renters?
Well, I think the most important thing to know there is what your rental agreement calls for. So if you make improvements to the property, you know, whether you can take that with you. And then if you're renting, you know, some places the utilities are rolled into the price of your rent. Some places it isn't. I think if you have an agreement that would allow you to take anything like a solar installation that you would add with you when you left,
right,
or at least that you could make that clear with your landlord, and that you're paying your utilities separately from the price of renting and based on what you use, I think there's probably a variety of mechanisms, again, whether it's a lease or it's an installation, to look at. The thing you want to be careful of is whether you can take it with you when you go. And then there's also, you know, there is a cost of installing the system. And obviously, if you're going to take it with you and uninstall it and put it somewhere else, that would be a kind of a double cost you would have that most people don't have to deal with.
Let me ask one more question of you, Susan. As you look out to the future here for companies like yours and really for the whole solar energy movement, what do you see in the next 3 years, the next 5 years, the next 20 years? Is this going to be a constant growth? Do you see a day where this actually is something we talk about alongside coal and oil as the big providers of energy for the United States?
Well, I agree with Chuck that it's, you know, in the long term, I think it's the future is very rosy for solar, because eventually someday we will run out of all the other fossil fuels. Right now, I think we will see some ups and downs like any other industry. I think what we're looking at in 2016 is the expiration of the federal tax credit. So there will be some interesting times ahead. But I think as we drive down costs, I think it will be a very sustainable industry.
And Chuck, in a sentence, how can people find out more about how, if they're KCP&L customers, at least they can get involved with this?
If a customer wants information from us, I'd have them go to our website, www.kcpl.com, and I imagine you could do the same thing with Brightergy.
Chuck Kaisley is Vice President of Marketing and Public Affairs at KCP&L. Susan Brown is Vice President of Public Affairs at Brightergy. Thank you both for being with us.
Thanks.
When we come back, we'll turn from the sky to the water, specifically the water in Kansas City's fountains. We love them, but what are we willing and needing to do to take care of them? Stay with us. I'm Brian Ellison, and you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR.